Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani on IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm really thrilled to be with all of you here today. I have a great show planned for you. I have two guests this week, Alethea Vasilis, am I saying your last name correct?
Vasilis, yeah.
Vasilis, and Aidan Feeney, and they are both farmers and doing great work with Orchestri Farm in Long Island, and it is a farm that is working with autistic young adults, and they are really doing some great work, and I'm really excited to introduce them to you in just a little bit. But before I invite them on, I want to talk to you about some things going on in and around the city, some things that you might want to get involved in, and of course share with you my weekly recipe. Last week I had the pleasure of attending the River Fund's Spring Gala, and the River Fund is the nonprofit food pantry that I partner with for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and they have a great program called Cradle to College. And what that is it's a fund that really supports families starting from when young women come to the food pantry who are pregnant and in need of supplies for a new baby, to helping support the kids going to school throughout. They have a huge backpack program getting kids school supplies that they need. And then they even have a college fund where they support kids going to college. And very often the reason that kids living in poverty drop out of college is not because they can't afford college. That's paid for. They get financial aid. But it's all the miscellaneous money that they don't have for their books, for their food, for their lodging. Or even for a subway fare, you know, or getting that pass that they can get on the subway to get to college. And this organization, the River Fund, does phenomenal work to really bridge that gap and come up with that money that will ensure that these kids can stay in college. And so the fundraiser was just awesome. It was really wonderful, and I do a lot of work with the River Fund. I recommend all of you checking it out online, riverfundnewyork or ny.org. It's a wonderful organization. Lots of other great things going on in and around the city. By the way, I hope all the mothers listening had a great Mother's Day. I know I did, and I wasn't with any of my kids. They were all out of town, unfortunately, but it was still wonderful. I got to hang out at home. Mother's Day is one day you definitely don't want to go out to a restaurant if you can avoid it. So we just grilled in the backyard, and it was really lovely. And so happy Mother's Day. And my guest today is actually an expectant mother. So motherhood is right around the corner for her. So that's really exciting. So some things that are going on that you might want to participate in. On May 18th, Andy Fisher, who will be a guest in a couple of weeks on my show, he's presenting his new book called Big Hunger, The Unholy Alliance Between Corporate America and Anti-Hunger Groups. And he's an adjunct instructor at Portland State University of Public Health. And he's going to talk about his new book, and it is from 4 to 5:30 at the CUNY Graduate School. And, you know, the book is really addressing hunger and where it, you know, the root causes of it. You know, we certainly have enough food in this country, and that is not the reason that people are hungry. It's really just, you know, has to do with corporate America and big business and the money that they make in keeping us all hungry. I mean, food pantries used to be, you know, something that was set up, and it's now become big money. I mean, there's a business of providing food for the homeless, and that really shouldn't be. Shouldn't be about profit. So anyway, check out Andy Fisher's book, Big Hunger, The Unholy Alliance Between Corporate America and Anti-Hunger Groups. May 20th is the March Against Monsanto. For those of you who do not know, this has been going on for, I think, 5 years now, this big March Against Monsanto. And if you go onto the website, March Against Monsanto, you will find many, many marches around the country, and I believe even around the world. Monsanto is one of the companies responsible for our genetically modified foods and for pushing pesticides and herbicides in our food supply. So they're really a bad organization, and we need to all become aware of them and the other organizations that, or companies that are like them, and do what we can to rally against them. Restoration Farm is one of our local organic farms here in Nassau County, and they are starting their farmers market at the end of this month, along with many farmers markets. This is the time that we're just getting going. And so if you don't know where to shop to find your local farmers market, you can go to localeats.com and find it there. You can also just Google CSAs, which are community supported agriculture, and find out about a farm near you, because as we all know, shopping locally and shopping at your local farmers market and supporting the farmers that are trying to do it right is really where it's at. And I also talked about the movie I saw a few weeks ago called Plastic Paradise, where it was just talking about all the plastic packaging that's in our foods. And one thing that's wonderful about shopping at the farmers market, you can bring your own bags and you don't have to deal with all the plastic that is wrapped around all the fruits and vegetables that we get when we shop at even nice stores like Trader Joe's. You know, everything's packaged in plastic, and it's really wonderful if we can get away from that. May 21st, Slow Food New York City is having their Slow Toast, which is a event to raise awareness about food waste. And we've done a lot of talking about food waste over the years. And as more and more people become aware of it, we're trying to figure out ways to use parts of the vegetables that we usually would throw out, or the bread that is stale and that we usually would throw out. And of course, you can always make breadcrumbs with that stale bread, but what else can you do with it? And so there's been a big push of bringing stale bread to your local brewery and getting them to make some great beer with the fermenting bread. I'm trying to hook that up right here on Long Island. I have not been successful yet, but I will not give up. But anyway, Slow Food New York City is having this Slow Toast. It's going to be at Jimmy's number 43, which is a great pub on 7th Street, and they support a lot of the slow food work, so come out for that. And Slow Food Long Island, or Slow Food North Shore, we have a couple really great events coming up. We have one where we're doing a tour of the Brooklyn Grange rooftop farm, and right after that, we then are going to the Rooftop Red Vineyard, which is a vineyard right in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, also on a rooftop. And so we'll first tour Brooklyn Grange, then Rooftop Red Vineyard, and then we're having a local gourmet pizzeria deliver delicious pizzas to the roof. And we'll be able to have a picnic up there overlooking the Manhattan skyline. We will make sure that there's gluten-free pizza and vegan pizza as well, so that everybody is covered. And, of course, we'll have salads and vegetables as well. So sign up for that. And then the next day, we're having a summer solstice celebration at Restoration Farm. And we will have music, great food, Rising Tide Natural Market will be supplying food for our cocktail hour. They are our snail of approval farm market in Nassau County, and we really want to support them, and they're supporting us, so that's really a nice partnership. And then we're hoping to see many of you out at Slow Food Nation in Denver, July 14th to 16th. We're going to be having a really huge national event in the heart of Denver, where we'll be bringing together farmers and chefs, educators, eaters, local growers, all for a weekend of tastings and tours and talks, and most of it's free. There are some tickets for some of the sessions, some of the classes or chef tastings, but a lot of it is free, and it's going to be a wonderful event. So if you can come out to that, we would love to see you there. I will actually be presenting a slideshow of our food and film feast while we're there. Slow Food North Shore has been, for the last 3 years, having a food and film feast once a year where we highlight short documentaries and pair it with food that is highlighted in the film along with a guest speaker. And it's a really successful program, and it's something that can be replicated and taken to other slow food chapters. So we're really excited to share that with people. And Sterling College, which is the alma mater of one of my guests today, they are having a five-day course on the art of fermentation from August 14th to 18th. They're up in Vermont, and that should be a great educational workshop. There will be instruction, field trips, and really a really worthwhile program. So if you're interested in fermentation, this might be a course that you want to look into. And I have lots of other events listed on my website, but I don't want to take the time and go over that now. So please check out my website at iegreen.com and find out some more about the events going on in our area. So I want to share with you my recipe this week. It's actually a two-part recipe. You can stop halfway through if you want. It's a mini stuffed masa harina corn muffin. But in order to stuff it, you need to make the chipotle chili that goes inside of it. So you can just make the chipotle chili one day and eat that with some brown rice and enjoy that. And then whatever's left over, make these little muffins and stuff them. And they're a great hors d'oeuvre or just a side dish along with your chili. So to first make the chili, you know, because I was doing another recipe, I didn't want to first start soaking the beans and pressure cooking the beans. So I did cheat and use canned beans, but I think that's really more reality for most of us out here. We want to just pull that together. So you can pull this chili together in a half an hour really easily. And I started with 2 cups of chopped onions, 1 cup of roasted peppers chopped. Now, I did already have the peppers roasted in my freezer from last fall's harvest. So that's one of the things that's beautiful when you have your garden and you have all that leftover produce that you're harvesting in the fall. You can process it in such a way and stick it in your freezer, and then you can pull it out on a rainy day, or in this case, it was a sunny day. But anyway, I pulled out the roasted peppers that have been there for, you know, a good part of the year, making room for this next year's harvest that's just getting going. So anyway, so I chopped up a cup of the roasted peppers. Then I opened 3 cans of beans, 1 can of organic pinto beans, 1 can of organic red kidney beans, and 1 can of organic black beans. And I use Eden brand beans. If you're going to buy organic beans, it's really nice if you purchase Eden brand, because they are the only ones that I know of that actually cook it with kombu, which really adds in the digestion of the beans and makes it last a little less gassy. So your friends will appreciate it too. You also want to put in 1 cup of fire-roasted corn, and I buy that frozen at Whole Foods. You know, I buy, it's organic. I know Trader Joe's also sells it, but it's not organic, but it is GMO-free, so you can figure that out yourself. 1 tablespoon of tomato paste, 1 tablespoon of chopped garlic, 1 can of organic diced tomatoes, 1.5 teaspoons of salt, 1 teaspoon of chili powder, 2 teaspoons of cumin, 4 dry chipotle peppers that are, you de-stem and take out the seeds, and then I just soaked it for like 10 minutes in some boiling water, and then drained them and chopped them up. When dealing with dry chipotle peppers or any hot peppers, you might want to wear some rubber gloves just so that you don't accidentally touch your eye afterwards and have a bad situation on your hands. So I wore my little plastic gloves for that. Then some oil, olive oil, safflower oil, canola oil, whatever you like, as long as it's organic and genetically modified free. And then cilantro to taste and garnish. If you're one of those that don't like cilantro, you can just substitute parsley for that. So you're going to start by sautéing the onions in the oil for about 5 minutes, then add the roasted peppers and the garlic. Then add the chipotle peppers, the cumin, and the chili powder, and cook that down just for about 5 minutes, allowing the spices to toast a little bit in the pan. Then add the beans. I drained the beans of the bulk of the liquid. Add the beans, the tomato, and the tomato paste. Then add the corn and the salt, and let that simmer for about 15 to 30 minutes. Just let it all come together. Taste it, adjust the flavors to your liking. If you don't like the chili really hot, you might want to consider leaving out the chipotle peppers, but that really is what gives it a nice bite. And I served it with some organic brown rice. And then, like I said, the part that I didn't serve, I left so that I could stuff these corn muffins, which were really great. And I really wanted to use the Masa Harina cornmeal as opposed to regular corn flour because it's a little coarser. It has a little bit stronger corn flavor, and it just tastes so much heartier to me. So these are just really great. They also are very quick, and I made them gluten-free and vegan so that all my friends can eat them. So I started with 2 tablespoons ground flaxseed, 2 tablespoons apple cider vinegar, and a quarter cup of water. And that kind of becomes my egg. You know, that's equivalent to like 2 eggs right there. And then I put in 1 cup of gluten-free flour. I use Pamela's bread mixture. I like that a lot and has no dairy in it at all. 1 cup of organic Masa Harina, 1/4 cup organic sugar, 4 teaspoons of baking powder, 1 teaspoon baking soda, 1/2 teaspoon salt, 1 cup of organic coconut milk, 1/4 cup organic coconut oil. You can use another oil if you prefer, but the coconut oil has a consistency more of shortening, so it makes the dough a little bit flakier. And I like that. I like my cornbread being a little crumbly. And that coconut oil really helps that. And then I put in the zest from 1 lime. And then you need the vegetarian chili. And if you, you know, really want to do a shortcut, of course you can find a good can of vegetarian chili somewhere out there and forget the whole first recipe. Like I said before, you're going to soak the flax seeds in the 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar along with the 1/4 cup of water and just let that sit for 5 minutes and it gets a little glutinous and becomes egg-like. And then in a large stainless steel bowl, I mix together all the dry ingredients. And then in my little mixer or my stand-up mixer, I combine the coconut milk with the coconut oil. Now, just a moment, with the coconut milk, when you first open a can of coconut milk, there's a layer of the coconut fat on the top and all the milk is at the bottom. And I always wonder what to do with that. And I've gotten into just taking the whole can and dumping it into a Pyrex measuring cup. And then I take my little immersion blender and blend it up so that the oil and the milk is all equally distributed throughout. And then I measure it. That way I don't have, you know, some parts that have a lot of the oil in it and some parts that are really watery. And so then you measure the 1 cup of coconut milk once you've already done that. And so in the mixer, I'm putting the coconut milk with the coconut oil, mix that up, and then I added the flaxseed to that. Once it all comes together, then I added the dried mixture to the wet and just mix it up. Once it's all mixed, then you're going to make you're going to make 1-inch balls with the dough and put them into mini cupcake tins and push the 1-inch ball into the cupcake tin and press down the center so that you're creating a concave or a little pocket that you're going to then fill with the chili. And so you create that pocket, there's 24 mini cupcake holders in my pan. I filled them all that way, and then I put the chili in the middle, and then I baked it for about 20 minutes. And if your back of your oven is hotter than the front, which most of us have that kind of oven, you want to rotate the pan halfway through so that it's equally cooked throughout. And the edges of the muffin get a little golden brown and crusty, and like I said, they become really flaky, and it's a really nice combination with the chili. So, as always, I hope you make the recipe and give me feedback. I love hearing from all of you about what you liked, what you didn't like, and any improvements. I'm always open to that. So, enjoy. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to each of you, or to all of you, Alethea Vasilis and Aidan Feeney. They are both directors at the Orchestai Farm in... What town is that?
Oyster Bay.
In Oyster Bay on Long Island. And Alethea, her background is in dance, somatic therapeutic exploration, cultural anthropology, and organic farming. And she brings all that together in agriculture and neurodiversity. And she holds a BA in African Studies from Brown University, an MA in Sociocultural Anthropology from Columbia University, and a certification in Biodynamics, Permaculture Design, and Developmental Somatic Psychotherapy. I guess we're going to have to ask her what that is. She has over 12 years of experience on an organic farm and 6 years experience working with autistic adults. And Orchestrae Farm is a farm in Oyster Bay that's working with autistic young adults, and it's really, it's making such an impact in these young people's lives. And Aidan Feeney has been here now 1 year on Long Island. He's working both at Young's Farm in, is that also considered?
Old Brookville.
Mm-hmm. And he originally came down from Nantucket Island, has always loved the outdoors, has been working in the Northeast Kingdom in Vermont, where he got his bachelor's degree at Sterling College, which is the same place as that fermentation workshop that I told you about earlier. And he's worked both with livestock and dairy operations in addition to organic vegetable production. And he's now down here managing Orchestrae Farm and working along with his partner, Natasha, who wasn't able to make it with us today. But together, they are really making a difference in so many people's lives, and I'm so thrilled to have them with us today. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, first, Alethea, can you first just tell us what Orchestrae's mission is?
Sure.
Great.
So, Orchestrae is a real grassroots kind of boutique little farm located in the Planting Fields Arboretum. And our mission is to promote the creative participation of people of all abilities through farming and through the arts. So we try to create community, have people move around outside together in their bodies, and really explore their surroundings in a very sensory way, and also their relationships. So we primarily work with adults with autism through an on-farm apprenticeship, mm-hmm. But we are open to people of all abilities.
And what is somatic psychotherapy? Because I know I'm very curious, and I'm sure my listeners are, and I'd like to know what that is and then how that mm-hmm. informs the work that you're doing.
Yeah, so... So this is also connected to our name and movement and dance. So it's complicated. Let me start.
Okay. <the beginning.
laughs> let me start with the story of the farm because it'll help me tell you developmental somatic psychotherapy is.
Okay.
Because I chose the name Orchestrae at first to many people's disapproval because it's such an odd name,
right?
And it's hard to pronounce. But because I was, I had this vision of a farm that was integrated with the arts, an art farm, and being a dancer in college and then afterwards, and having traveled to places in West Africa, and then being a part of a dance company in the city that was informed by another dance company in Japan whose work developed on a farm and whose performances were based on farms, I started to see the connection between movement and farming and the choreography of farming. Mm-hmm. And so the first experience I had of an art farm is just a very old way of farming, like uh-huh. traditions of years and years past that we've lost to more production methods.
Right, you don't usually think of farming and choreography right. going together.
Right, but I was traveling in Mali, in the northern part of Mali in West Africa, and... I was with a professor from Brown, and we heard drums. We had stopped on the side of the road just for a break, and we heard drums from afar. So we, our translator said, oh, he was very bubbly. He's like, oh, let's go see what they're doing.
Right.
We're like, well, we don't want to interrupt anything. You know, he's, oh, don't worry about it. So we went out and walked onto a field that was being cultivated by the whole entire community and the neighboring community. People had come out, and there were the farmers with their hoes hoeing in unison to the beat of drums, and then dancers who were
really
who were there in a circle, and they were all farming together, and other people were bringing food. So it was a whole entire community effort. And I said, my gosh, this is the way farming should
be. Yes, that's what I'm thinking too. It's like, I've never seen farming like that.
Because I learned farming from my father, who is wonderful, but, you know, basically dropped me in a 7-acre field by myself and waved at me as he drove on the past on the tractor. So I liked hard work, but I often felt like, gosh, this should be a community effort.
Absolutely. My garden at home, I don't call it a farm because it's not big enough, mm-hmm. but it's a big garden. It's too much by myself, you know, and it's, you know, I open it up to community to come and work with me, because when you have other people out there working with you, it doesn't feel like work. It feels like socializing.
Exactly.
And you happen to be, you know, weeding at the same time,
exactly.
but you're talking and you're singing and you're, and you know, having an experience.
Good
and,
for the soul, therapeutic, in a very just down to earth way.
Right.
So years later, then I was working with a woman with autism, and she was going to college, and we did mostly schoolwork together, but then she typed to communicate mostly. She was mainly nonverbal, but we had a lot of words by typing,
uh-huh.
a lot of communications, and she said to me, I think I want to be a farmer. Can I come to your father's farm? So so I said, of course, we should go try it out. And her mother was a big gardener, and she was familiar with it. But we went out to Orient, where my father's farm is, and spent a day there. And we planted probably 600 tomatoes, which my dad was happy with the productivity, but she really, this was a real challenge for her to stay focused and concentrated for that amount of time and to not become overwhelmed by things that were going on around her. So there was something about the work, but there was also something about how she moved that we could choreograph the work together, because she had a rocking motion back and forth, and it was like, perfect for farming.
Uh-huh.
And we got into a rhythm together, and you know, six hours later, you know, we went home, and her mom was like, okay, I'm buying a farm.
Oh, really?
So anyway, this is a really long story about developmental somatic psychotherapy. It is connected, but all of the movements of farming have, they not only allow us to work and get the work done and to functionally put stuff in the ground, but they're also draw on different relational movements, pushing, pulling, incorporating into yourself, back and forth, you know, like a real dance with the land and with each other. That can help also promote social interaction with, you know, people who sometimes don't.
And so is that going back to somatic? That's basically what somatic psychotherapy is?
So developmental somatic psychotherapy was developed by a woman whose name is Ruella Frank. And I did a 2-year training with her, because I was interested in dance, and I was seeing movement all over the place.
Right.
And I was also a farmer. So all of this stuff was becoming integrated. And there's like an arc of relational movements that go from being inside yourself and kind of yielding. It's always, there's always a supposed other. So you're reaching out into your environment. You're grasping something. You're pulling it. You're taking it into yourself. And you're incorporating it into your experience. Uh-huh. And you know, and then you're, again, pushing it back out. So all of these movements, some of us have them more present than others. Like, it's more available to us.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of people who work with yoga, for example, can see different patterns in our bodies. So if the way I look at movement and the way I look at farming, it's kind of like a vehicle for kind of learning to move fluidly and in relationship. Mm-hmm. And to say, like shoveling, you're working on pushing, you know, into your environment. Uh-huh. And sometimes if you're internal and just don't want to come out, it's like an edge you can push up against,
right,
and really
right.
try to practice that
excellent.
Anyway, it's very complicated.
You know, although as I listen to you speak, I can really feel and understand how beneficial these young adults, you know, what a wonderful opportunity that they are getting to work with someone who has that vision that you have. Because most people don't, you know. I mean, and, you know, a job like farming can be very rudimentary and, you know, a lot of work and not always so much pleasure. And so to be able to incorporate it into a movement and a rhythm, I can imagine it being really...
and it's all very implicit. Like, I don't go around talking
of
about
course.
It.
Of course not.
But, I mean, people have fun and hopefully feel supported and also have a lot of others around them so we can...
Yeah, it's always wonderful incorporating all your different interests and seeing how they come together to, you know, for me, you know, that's how I got it. I cooked through college, but I was an artist.
Right.
I went to art school, and so... You know, my food became my art, and through my art, you know, and my having kids, I got into biodynamics and Rudolf Steiner, and then I got into nutrition, and then I got into, you know, it all came together too. So many different things, and I know the same for you, Aiden. I mean, you've been able to draw so many of your interests together to come into the work that you're doing. Maybe you can share a little bit of your history and all the different interests that you're pulling together in your farming.
Sure. So I've always loved being outside. And that was, that's kind of been, I've always known that's where I wanted to work. That's where I wanted to spend my time. You know, my father had a little farm when we were growing up with like chickens, and we raised animals and some things. And it wasn't until I really had a job in landscape construction and doing tree work and I just started seeing acres and acres of kind of, you know, just wasted space that...
Lawns.
Yeah, just lawns. And,
right.
You know, you're spending 45 hours a week just managing these spaces, and it just seems kind of trivial after a while.
Mm-hmm.
That's what decided, you know, that's how I made the decision to actually go to college and get a degree in agriculture and start working on farms.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that became, you know, it was really like a, I guess like a keystone moment for me where, you know, once you are just kind of more aware of our food production and how we interact with our ecology, but, you know, in the context of, you know, food, it really just makes you look at everything in a different way, whether it's politics or nutrition or, you know, history in particular, everything. And, I've just kind of been going down that wormhole for 8 years.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about food. It brings everything together. I mean, first off, it's something that we all share. Everybody eats, you know, so it's a commonality that we all have. What we eat might be different, but we all eat. And it brings people together, you know, in community. And so, you know, I always love doing everything with that in mind. So, Aiden or Alethea, either of you, I know I've talked many times in the past about CSAs. I mentioned it in my talk a little bit earlier, but it's community supported agriculture. And can you tell us a little bit about it? And is your farm a community supported agriculture? Do you have members?
Yeah. So we are a CSA, and a CSA, it stands for community supported agriculture, like you said. So do you want history on CSAs or what CSAs are?
No, more in relation to the work that you're doing with your farm.
Okay, so yeah, we run two 10-week programs, and each week our members of our CSA get a box, and it's all vegetables that we're doing. And we have a focus on doing things like salad greens, and but you can expect a variety of vegetables. But really what sets the parameters of, you know, crop selection for us is space, because it's a smaller space. So we look at crops that we can get repeated harvests off of and crops that are fast growing. And, so we're not going to be having things like winter squash and potatoes, but we have lots of tomatoes, zucchinis, radishes, and salad greens, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And where does broccoli fall? Broccoli cauliflower. Yeah, so where's that fall in there?
Those crops, they take 90 time, days, right? And you get one harvest more or less. So less of things like that. We might have some broccolini, because broccolini you get a month harvest window off of.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, unfortunately, you know, that's...
Broccoli Rob's a great one.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. Kale. But, you know, definitely things like kale, because kale just keeps giving.
Right. Swiss chard.
Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh.
Carrots, beets.
Yeah. So, you know, that's our focus, is kind of like really garden vegetables in a sense. And what I love about those crops, you know, in particular salad greens, is, you know, it kind of gives you room for creating your own mixture, your own mescaline mix or something like that. And it normally really leaves quite the impression on people when they have a fresh gourmet salad, as opposed to something that's been shipped for 3,000 miles and is 2 weeks old.
Right, right.
It really resonates with people. Yeah. Big time.
Absolutely. And you said two 10-week sessions. So someone can become a member just for 10 weeks as opposed to 20 weeks?
Yeah. So our first half is sold out. And then our second half, we have a waiting list going. So it's definitely something worth exploring, but we're not sure if we can accommodate more people. But yeah, this was our first year doing it. And instead of doing, you know, one 20-week program, we want to give people an option to just sign up for 10 weeks at a time.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they get to experience different seasons there as well, you know, because opening up, we're not going to have things like tomatoes, but we'll have arugula and radishes, which are hard to have in the middle of August as well.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, you know, you get a taste of the seasons that way.
Right. Yeah. Now, you also run an apprenticeship program, right? How does that work?
So there are two components. We participate in the work for the CSA, and it's a collaborative effort.
And so when you say we, it's of course you guys, so also the autistic young adults?
Yeah, we have 10 apprentices, and each apprentice comes with their support person. So we're all farming together, and probably... And then we have community days as part of the apprenticeship, so families can come and CSA members come and we all work together.
And do these young adults work 5 days a week? They come 5 days a week?
No, this year it's just 2 days a week, so it's a small program. And then we also have a community plot where everybody is designing the plot together, and they can choose what they want to grow and how, you know, it's all theirs to take home.
So when you say community, it's your community.
The apprenticeship community.
And
so they're growing their own food.
Okay, so they can take that home. But then the other part that you're growing is to supply for the CSA.
Exactly.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Okay. And what about the expressive agriculture part of your program? What is that?
So for some community days, we have expressive agriculture is related to my ideas about dance in the field and... It doesn't just have to be that, but any way of expressing oneself in community. We've had painting in the field. We've had dance in the field. maybe we'll have cooking in the field.
I hope so.
you know, we've done just movement experiments, and people will come together for a community day. So we'll do some farm work, and then we'll do some art and movement to promote interactions between people who would perhaps not interact with each other on a daily basis. Uh-huh.
And can you get all the work done in just 2 days a week? Or no. Do you have other people working other days?
So Aiden and Natasha are there working on the CSA plot. But the program, the apprenticeship right now is just, it's small. Like I said, we're still grassroots. So it's... we need to do more fundraising as part of the problem.
So Aiden, are you there every day? Or
Natasha is more of the everyday manager. And, you know, I'm there probably 3 or 4 days a week. I'm there doing most of the machine work because we do have a little bit of, we have a small machine that does some of the work. But it's Natasha who's doing most of the transplanting and seeding and weeding and things like that.
Uh-huh. And on the community plot, we're trying out different methods on different plots. We're doing everything by hand, so it's more sensory based, like in the dirt.
Right. I would think for the apprenticeship program.
Yeah.
I can't imagine them wanting to use something that's loud and noisy.
No. Actually.
Really?
We have some great mowers. They really, there's a couple of guys that just love mowing. It's like a little bit of a call to attention, you know? Uh-huh. You have a lot of sensory input on the holding the bar of the mower. And, you know, sometimes that could be calming to somebody, too.
Okay, all right. I wouldn't think of it that way.
Yeah, everyone has different, you know.
Quirks.
You just never know. Uh-huh, uh-huh. You have to just spend time with someone to get to know them and try all sorts of things.
And is your farm completely organic?
Yeah, so we've taken the Farmer's Pledge with NOFA, which...
For those that don't know, NOFA is the Northeast Organic Farming Association.
Yeah, and that means that, you know, the farm was never conventional, but there's still a transition process. So we couldn't go out there and put organic stickers on our food, but just the fact that we've taken the Farmer's Pledge and we can display that, that shows that we're organic in practice and, you know, not certified organic yet because that's a 4-year process. But otherwise we're there. And we are 100% organic in practice.
And what about I know you're on the grounds of the planting fields. Mm-hmm. What's their philosophy in regards to pesticides and herbicides? I mean, because, always hear about, the fungi,
the rhizome,
cosmos that live underneath the soil and how connected it is.
Yeah,
you know, and if they're spraying the trees,
right?
Even if you're not eating that, they're spraying the trees. You know, 100 yards away.
Right.
Does that get into the soil and then contaminate your garden? How does that work?
It can. I mean, the planting fields, unfortunately, has said that they have state standards that they have to do certain things, but I know the director stays away from our farm because he was very concerned about that we took the Farmer's Pledge and wanted to make sure that he wasn't doing anything that was within too close of a standard. So unfortunately, although he's interested in sustainability, that the planting fields isn't organic. Right. Which is maybe another front to face on the state level. You know, it's a lot of bureaucracy which could be confronted. But yes, I mean, there are standards. You might know more of the specifics about, like, I don't think the planting fields is not spraying trees around us. And they stay far away from us and with everything they do.
But, you know, their greenhouses definitely are not organic.
No.
And, you know, their potting mixes that they're using for annuals are not organic.
Right.
Because, you know, with certain things like potting mix, I'm sure that would just increase their budget and they wouldn't want to do that. They wouldn't want to use a natural fertilizer instead of a cheap synthetic fertilizer, things like that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But But it's the same story as all of our municipalities. I mean, every municipality is spraying Roundup mm-hmm. at the base of power lines and things like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's the same deal. But luckily, we have our own corner of the park, and we're really doing our own thing over there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's really hard, right? Because, yeah, their hands are tied, or they just want to do it the easy way, and they don't want to really think outside the box and see how they can stay within the regulations and at the same time be green.
Right.
And I'm sure there's a way.
Yeah, probably.
It takes effort. I mean, I know there's certain parks that, you know, are, you know, the one in Nassau County, Cantioch Road, Cantioch Park, the maintenance person there has been doing that golf course organic for years now.
Yeah.
You know, and you always think that you have to, you constantly hear that you have to spray, you know, to have a nice golf course.
Right.
And that's so toxic, you know, all those people playing out on a golf course.
Oh,
and here I know the Cantioch's doing it organically, so I know it can be done.
Yeah. And I think they would want to. It's, again, people have to step up and say stuff, say something.
Right.
Go, like, probably directly to the state.
So, Aiden, you studied farming at school. Is that where you learned?
Yeah, that's where I got my start and everything. That's where I got my feet wet. And then I worked on a couple farms in Vermont, kind of ranging from small, you know, raw milk dairies and you know, all types of grass-based livestock operations, and then also some vegetable farms. One of the farms we did, you know, about 2 acres of crops that all went to kimchi and sauerkraut. And then Sterling College itself had a working farm. I was the greenhouse manager there. So I was overwintering vegetable crops and things. Then I went to the Hudson Valley after I was in Vermont, and I managed a vegetable operation on a farm, on an existing farm, where we brought crops in to sell at farmers markets in the city twice a week. And eventually I ended up at Young's Farm, and I started working there last year.
Hey, Young's Farm is the farm that's right down here in Old Brookville. And for years, I mean, they were, you know, our local farm, and yet they weren't organic at all. And so
super conventional.
Right, super conventional, exactly. And so it's really so nice to hear that you are transitioning that farm and that farm stand over towards organic.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So it's a pretty unique piece of property. It's been continually farmed for hundreds of years, and the soil is really showing that in a lot of ways. I mean, compared to Orkestai Farm, at Orkestai you dig into the soil and you can see the diversity of life inside the soil, where a lot of Young's Farm looks like a beach just from, you know, the decades of tillage and, you know, all the chemicals and everything. But this past year, we've just really been aggressively, you know, cover cropping and adding a lot of green manures and, you know, brown manures, horse manures and compost. And we're actually seeing a lot of earthworms now. So that's a really good sign. And yeah, we're doing about 15 acres in production there. And yeah, we grow all types of crops. We even do some peaches. And yep.
That's exciting. That's exciting because it's such a beautiful farm. I mean, when I drive by it and I look over there now, it really just has such a different look. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks like it's being done more grassroots and organic. Mm-hmm. It's covered with the cover crop and then the hay or the, the hay, right, not straw. Of course, it's a think twice, it's hay or straw. You know, just all covered and, always want to pull over and find the farmer there. I'm so glad to know that it's you, and I'm going to do that next time and just pull over.
Yeah. Actually, Young's Farm used to rent land from the planting fields. I don't remember what year. Do you remember the years?
It was before it was a state park. So it was when it was it the Coes?
Yeah.
The Coe family, when it was their estate, John Young used to grow corn and different things, and the backfields where Orkestai is now. So, I think that was in the 1960s, I want to say, because it became a park in 1968.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, Can you share with us some of your dreams for Orchestrae Farm? I know you know you're expecting a baby now. Do you want to bring your baby out into the field with you this summer?
The baby will definitely come to the field at some point. I'm trying to reserve judgment about how I'm going to feel.
Are you looking to grow it? Because like you said, right now you only have 10. But so, the farm that you used as your model, what was that farm called?
Sustainability Farm.
They were quite larger, right?
We had more people coming on a daily basis, but it was like unstructured, and so it wasn't, you know, it was kind of come and go, and it was.
Free for all,
which is great. I mean, it allows more people to come, but we really were trying to give
more structure
and consistency and attention.
So, are you looking to grow the farm, though, the program?
Yeah, I mean, eventually it would be amazing to. I mean, it's great to be at the planting fields, but I think, you know, to make it a real sustainable operation, first we're gonna have to fundraise, so my dream is to have someone come and swoop down and help me do that. If anyone's out there. But you know, it would be amazing to have an actual space, like a community center where we can have real events. Maybe, you know, people could live on the farm. I've had a couple of parents, because one of the issues that our farm tries to address is the aging out of the school system.
Sure.
When a lot of people with differing abilities lose a lot of services and kind of have to decide, do I want to go to an agency? Now, there's this model of self-direction where you get a budget from the government and you can kind of choose who you want to support you and where what you want to do. Most of our participants come through that model. Mm-hmm. But I've had a few parents, you know, I guess I would really love to hand it off to a really inspired parent who wants to make this like a real community for people who can live and work and relate and almost would be a gift of mine to some family who might have the resources to fundraise and continue it beyond me, because I, you know, becoming a mother and I'm becoming a therapist too.
This is your future. You more want to pass this on and see it grow under someone else's guidance.
I would love to participate in it, and I think it also needs a leader that can take it beyond what I'm capable of right now, where I am in my life, you know, because the realities of running a small nonprofit organization are that it's, at the end of the day, hard to feed your family. not in our case, because we have a lot of food. But I would love to see somebody who really is invested, you know, it's probably a family. And I've had one family approach me from the city, actually, who wants to buy land and create a residence and have an ongoing community that works together and participates in the arts.
I would come in and do your dance workshops.
Yeah, I would love to facilitate that. So if anyone's out there, that I think is more my...
Calling
is to facilitate and give a gift of this project and help with kind of birthing it into its next phase.
And what about you, Aiden? What are you looking to, what do you see in your future?
I definitely want to keep farming and growing food with Natasha and, you know, other members of the community, because, you know, it can be lonely sometimes, so... That's what makes Orchestrae great, is, you know, it keeps people on the farm and
brings people together.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, I'll be here. I'll be at Young's Farm.
Wonderful. Well, I want to thank you both for joining me and sharing your vision and the work that you're doing with Orchestai Farm, and the difference you're making in these young people's lives is tremendous. Mm-hmm. I know I can only imagine how lucky they are to have both of you guiding them. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And everybody out there, have a great rest of the week. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And just so you know, I will share the contact information and website of Orchestai Farm on my website and in my newsletter so that you can all reach out if you're interested. Thanks again, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye. Have a great week.